It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh, hello, hello, welcome, welcome, one and all. Huh, I sound funny. Must be because I just woke up. That's right, I'm recording this at, about 12. It's 6 o'clock local time. I haven't quite figured out what my UTC offset is after our time change. I think, oh, there it is. It's 12:41 p.m. UTC. All right. It's November 29th, 2021, and it is 1900 UTC when you're hearing this because it's time for news to me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Sorry for the kind of redundant intro. Like I said, I'm just waking up and I sound funny to myself. So maybe my voice will wake up as I drink this wonderful tea. Man, the world needs more tea in it. I'm just drinking some garbage, some low-quality tea, as Toe would call it. But it's good stuff. When you just wake up and you can't really taste anything anyway. Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
It's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care.
No, not really. I can still taste stuff and smell stuff. But we do have lots of COVID news to talk about today, too. So, anyway, I'll stop spacing out. Let's go ahead and just get into it. Let's go ahead and start talking about
world news.
That's right, the world news. First, reinstated Sudanese PM Hamdok dismisses police chiefs. This happened over the weekend. Medics say dozens of people have been killed as security forces sought to crush weeks of anti-coup protests. Sudan's reinstated Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok has replaced the country's police chiefs in a move that came after the people were killed in a crackdown. Army Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan on October 25th dissolved the transitional government, and security forces detained dozens of politicians, including Hamdok, and activists. However, after international condemnation and mass protests, he, being the general, reinstated the prime minister in November 21st deal that was slammed by the country's pro-democracy movement, protesting against the military's involvement in politics at all. Medics say at least 42 people were killed, with protests continuing even after Hamdok's release from house arrest and returned to his post. On Saturday, Hamdok said in a statement he'd sacked the director general of the police, Khaled Mahdi Ibrahim al-Imam, and his deputy, Ali Ibrahim. In their place, he appointed Anan Ahmed Mohammed Omar with Abdel Rahman Nasreddin Abdallah as his deputy. Doctors have accused security forces of targeting protesters in the head, neck, and torso with live ammunition, as well as with rubber-coated bullets and tear gas canisters. The police have denied reports they opened fire using live bullets. In addition, hundreds of political activists, journalists, protesters, and bystanders watching the rallies have been arrested in recent weeks and remain in custody. The protests this week have opposed Hamdok's decision to sign the accord with the military, with some calling it a betrayal or saying it provides political cover for the takeover. Despite the fact that the deal calls for accountability for the violence, it could be a step taken by the Prime Minister to appease the streets. It's not clear if that could have any impact, said Al Jazeera's Hiba Morgan, reporting from Khartoum. Especially because the anger is directed at the agreement and the fact the Prime Minister signed an agreement in the first place. While several civilian leaders have been released since Sunday's deal, key figures are also still in detention. The agreement raised hopes for some that Sudan will be able to return to its tenuous transition process, not happening. Prior to last month's coup, Sudan's transitional government was composed of the Sovereign Council, a joint military-civilian body headed by al-Burhan, and a civilian cabinet led by Hamdok. The military was due to hand over the Governing Council's leadership to a civilian in the coming months. So, it's kind of not a big surprise that they would seize power when they're about to lose it. The deputy head of the Sovereign Council, General Mohamed Hamdo Dagalo, told Al Jazeera in an exclusive interview that aired on Friday that Hamdok was aware of last month's military takeover before it happened and was completely agreeable to it. That's kind of the bombshell we talked about last week. Following the deal he signed with Al-Burhan, Hamdok told Al Jazeera he would form a technocratic government made up of qualified professionals to lead the country to elections by June 2023. Prime Minister said he partnered with the military in order to stop the bloodshed and not squander the gains of the last 2 years. The deal does lay down a clear date for Sudan's first free elections in 3 decades, slated for July 2023. It's kind of, this more of the same.
Resistance is futile.
And if you do resist,
that's correct.
You're going to meet some guy with some guns and walkie-talkies for sure. All right, well, while we're talking about Sudan, Ethiopia denies attacks on Sudan and blames rebels for the violence. Ethiopia has denied it staged an attack over the weekend along its shared border with Sudan, blaming unrest in the disputed zone on rebels from its war-hit Tigray region. The Tigray region is that northernmost state. It's the most populous, biggest state in Ethiopia. On Saturday, Sudan's military said several soldiers had been killed in an attack by armed groups and militias linked to the Ethiopian military in the fertile expanse known as Al-Fashaqa, Al-Fashaqa. The area has long been a source of tension between Addis Ababa and Khartoum, sparking deadly clashes over the last year. But in the comments that aired on state media on Sunday, Ethiopian government spokesman Legesse Tulu dismissed claims the military had attacked Sudan as groundless. Instead, he blamed the violence on the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or the TPLF, the fighter group that's been locked in a gruesome war against Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government since November 2020, and claims to be approaching the capital Addis Ababa. A large group of insurgents, bandits, and terrorists had entered from Sudan, Legesse said, in comments aired by Ethiopian Broadcasting Corporation, without providing evidence. The Ethiopian National Defense Force and local militia have destroyed them, he said. Legesse also said the TPLF was training in Sudan and received support from unspecified foreign backers. The land in Al-Fashaqa has for years been cultivated by Ethiopian farmers, though Sudan claims it falls within its territories. In November 2020, around the time Abiy sent troops into the Tigray to remove the TPLF, Khartoum stationed troops in Al-Fashaqa, a move Addis Ababa has described as an invasion. So, this will be very interesting to see how this kind of plays out and whether or not there is a peaceful solution here. It sounds like both sides are putting out stories that are wildly different and contradict each other. So, it's going to be hard in those areas to get clear news about it. But, hey, I want to take a second here and just mention that if you want to hang out and chat and be a kind of cool person, hang out and have fun in with other people who are listening to the show, and me probably, as long as I don't have any stupid meetings or anything, you can jump on. All you got to do, jump into Calm. That's the chat program we use when we're talking. All you need to do is SSH over to SDF. You can use tty.sdf.org, or just pick your host that you like. If you don't have an account, you just use new, N-E-W, at sdf.org, and then from there, you will follow the sign-up process. Just put your name, choose your email, and all that stuff. And once you do, you'll be able to log in. And logging in, the first few times, feels really cool, because you're connecting to this super powerful cluster up in the cloud somewhere, so far away. But, once you're there, all you need to do is run com, C-O-M. Once you do that, I pushed the wrong tmux ls. Shucks. Hold on. Doot. Anyway, what you would do is then launch com, C-O-M, press enter. Then you'll press G for go to. And then type Anon Radio, all lowercase, all one word. And when you do that, you'll be brought into the Anon Radio room. And depending on when you join, you may see dozens of people that are currently in the room. And you'll be able to talk to them or hang out. You can press H for help, and that'll show you all the different commands. To begin talk mode, all you do is press space, then you can type. And really, it's fun times. You'll see everybody talking. Usually we have five or six people at least chatting, and it's a good time. I don't want to forget anybody, so I'm just not going to say anybody's name. But it's a lot of fun, definitely worth checking out. I need to hit D for detach. Oh, no. Control A, D. Exit. All right, there we go. Oh, my caps lock key is on. Jeez Louise, what a train wreck. Do not try and compute while sleepy. But such is life, you know.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
It's true. All right, let's do a couple more news stories, and then we'll play a song, and then go through some more news.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
In China, North Korean fugitive captured after a 40-day manhunt. A North Korean man has been recaptured after evading the police for 40 days, following a bold escape from a Chinese prison. The 39-year-old man, known by his Chinese name Zhu Jian, was arrested again on Sunday, according to a brief statement from Chinese police. Zhu had been sentenced to prison in the city of Jilin after fleeing to China from North Korea in 2013. A large bounty was offered for information leading to his capture. Footage released by state-run Beijing News showed Zhu on the night of 19th of October climbing a prison shed and scaling its rooftop before vaulting over the nearest electric fence to freedom. The video also showed prison guards attempting to give chase. The escape triggered a manhunt for him that generated wide interest on Chinese social media. Authorities progressively increased the reward for information directly leading to his capture from 700,000 yuan, which is 82,000 pounds, to bolster chances of him being found. Images of his eventual capture, released by Jilin local TV stations, showed Zhu looking pale and emaciated as he lay on the ground with his hands cuffed behind his back. Zhu had been initially imprisoned on charges of illegal entry into China, larceny, and robbery after escaping from reclusive North Korea. Court records show he had crossed a river separating North Korea from China in 2013 and raided several houses in a nearby village, stealing money, mobile phones, and clothes. He also stabbed an elderly woman who discovered him and tried to flee in a taxi before being arrested by police. Zhu had served 9 years of his prison term, and at the time of his escape, was 2 years shy of being released and deported back to North Korea. Some had speculated he escaped jail to avoid going back. China forcibly repatriates North Koreans, despite being party to the 1951 UN Convention on Refugees, which obliges signatories not to return refugees if it may put them at risk of persecution or torture. China sees defectors as illegal migrants rather than refugees, which allows them to be dealt with as criminals in the legal system. So, he was caught. No more a threat to the Great People's Republic, I guess. So, here's a sad little story for you. River blindness is increasing in Uganda again. Jessica Atta hasn't been to the river Aswa since 2014, when she was diagnosed with river blindness. Back then, 1.5 million people in Uganda were affected by onchocerciasis that is carried by the black fly. It's onchocerciasis. The vector thrives along water rapids, like the one that runs through several districts. With the return of rains, there's been a huge surge in black flies. The community just out the city of Gulu is in fear, haunted by a tropical disease that has permanently impaired the vision of many in the region. "I sometimes feel a buzzing sound in my ears. My head hurts like I'm being hit," says Jessica, referring to her condition. 10 years ago, Uganda had successfully interrupted the transmission of river blindness with aggressive initiatives, including deploying airplanes to spray chemicals that killed the flies. Now experts are worried there could already be cases. "We've taken long without conducting the spraying, and as a result, they are having good breeding ground, and possibly that could explain why the numbers of black flies are increasing, and it is all worrying us. First of all, it indicates that we are at a very high risk of getting river blindness again. Resurgence of river blindness in the region," said Dr. Kenneth Kanna, acting district health officer for Gulu. Is quoted saying there. "Even worse, scientists have suggested black flies may be the cause of nodding syndrome, but available data is inconclusive." Villagers who inherently depend on this river must find ways of avoiding deadly bites. Children go down there for swimming and fishing. Those ones are highly affected because when you come into the river in the morning, you can get the flies while they're still in an open place, says local leader of Paget Parish, Onguek Phillips Aguila. So the government conducts mass drug administration twice a year to treat river blindness and has achieved 90% coverage in rural areas, but still thousands of people near the river at risk of infection from increasing black flies. This is one of those diseases that you used to hear about and nobody really talked about since then. And it's kind of, it's a trip to hear or talk about it. The World Health Organization and WHO, there's a Wikipedia article. It's basically a parasitic worm. You get itching, bumps under the skin, and blindness are the symptoms. It's the second most common cause of blindness due to infection in the world. And the worm is spread by the bites of a black fly. Usually many bites are required before infection occurs. They live near rivers. Once inside a person, the worms create larvae that make their way out to the skin, where they can affect the next black fly that bites the person. There are a number of ways to make the diagnosis, including a biopsy, and watching for the larva, looking in the eye for larva, and looking within the bumps under the skin for adult worm. A vaccine against the disease does not exist. Prevention is by avoiding being bitten by flies. Other efforts include those to decrease the fly population, which is what we're talking about. And that's just from Wikipedia. And then there's a scanning 100x magnification image of a black fly with the worm coming out of its antenna. It's just chilling. It's one of the fly-based diseases are one of the diseases I get most scared about. Ugh. All right, let's go ahead and forget all our worries with Cocaine from Eric Clapton.
Down. Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. You're listening to Anon Radio, and Anon Radio is powered by you. Thank you so much for listening and being here. And just hello. Welcome. We've got about 10 minutes or so to go before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, which is a fun show that airs every single day at 1930 UTC, as long as, well, just every day. There's always a show, and hopefully you can join the committee and check it out. Also, press the equal sign. If you're in comm, you can press the equal sign to get a nice text-based menu, calendar, show you all the upcoming shows that are going on Anon Radio. You can also go to anonradio.net and see the schedule that way, too. Alright, and that was Eric Clapton singing Cocaine, by the way, if it wasn't clear, from the long guitar riffs and saying Cocaine a bunch. I like that song. That really reminds me of the 80s. Alright, we've got a COVID block of stories, but before we jump into that, let's talk about nuclear power. Iran nuclear talks are set to resume, and Tehran is quoted as saying they're determined to salvage the deal. They're planning to restart the talks after a five-month hiatus. Analysts predict major obstacles to any speedy resumption of the 2015 nuclear deal. So if you want a video, there's a video over there at France 24. But if you just want to hear me tell you about it, stay tuned. Critical talks with Iran to prevent the collapse of a nuclear deal are set to resume in Vienna after 5 months. Officials will discuss the possible return of the U.S. to the 2015 accord, which limited Iran's nuclear activities in return for the lifting of sanctions. Iran has violated key commitments since President Donald Trump pulled out in 2018 and reinstated sanctions. Joe Biden is willing to lift them if Iran reverses the breaches, but it wants the U.S. to make the first move. Western diplomats have warned that time is running out to negotiate a solution because of the significant advances Iran has made in its uranium enrichment program, which is a possible pathway to a nuclear bomb. I think people are... Anyway, nuclear power, as I'm sure Publius can attest, is often this giant boogeyman, and it's just... I don't know. I think every country in the world should have access to the cleanest, most efficient power that they can get their hands on. And if it's nuclear power, then so be it. So they can maybe stop damming up rivers and stuff. Anyway, Iran insists that its nuclear program is entirely peaceful. The talks between Iran and the five countries still party to what is known formally as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, China, France, Germany, Russia, and the UK, began in the Austrian capital in April, with U.S. representatives participating indirectly. I think we talked about that when that was going on. Senior U.S. official told the New York Times that an agreement on which steps needed to be taken and when by Washington and Tehran was largely complete before the Iranian presidential election in June. Ibrahim Raisi, a hardliner and strident critic of the West, won the race to secede Hassan Rouhani, a moderate who negotiated the JCPOA, that agreement we talked about, with Barack Obama. Mr. Raisi promised before taking office in August that he would not let the talks drag on, but he did not agree to return to Vienna until earlier this month. He's insisted Iran's negotiators will not back down in any way in defending its interests. The Iran Foreign Ministry has said they want an admission of culpability from the U.S., the immediate lifting of all U.S. sanctions, and a guarantee that no future U.S. president would unilaterally abandon the deal again. Mr. Biden's special envoy for Iran, Robert Malley, has said the U.S. is prepared to take all the steps necessary to come back into compliance, including lifting sanctions. But Mr. Malley has also warned Iran that the window for negotiations will not be open forever. This is not a chronological clock, it's a technological clock. At some point, the JCPOA will have been so eroded because Iran will have made advances that cannot be reversed, in which case we can't be talking, and you can't revive a dead corpse, is what the special envoy for Iran said last month. And this is key news for us, but just my take, it's kind of silly to... You know, it's like, you know what? You cannot you cannot learn or figure out how to do something. It's just such a strange requirement for trade to resume. It's like there's, anyway, the U.S. is a terror, is not the good guy almost always. This will be interesting. We'll talk about it in comp. But anyway, the nuclear talks are set to resume, which I think is going to be good news for the world. Not so good news for the United States. Both sides are telling the Supreme Court there's no middle ground in Wednesday's showdown over abortions. The justices can either reaffirm the constitutional right to an abortion or wipe it away altogether. Roe v. Wade was a landmark 1973 ruling that declared a nationwide right to abortion in the United States, and it's facing its most serious challenge in 30 years in front of a court with a 6-3 conservative majority that was has three appointees of former President Donald Trump. "There are no half measures here," said Sheriff Gerges, a Notre Dame law professor who once served as a law clerk for Justice Samuel Alito. A ruling that overturned Roe and the 1992 case of Planned Parenthood versus Casey would lead to outright bans or severe restrictions on abortion in 26 states, according to Guttmacher Institute, a research organization that supports abortion rights. The case being argued Wednesday comes from Mississippi, where a 2018 law would ban abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy, well before viability. The Supreme Court has never allowed states to ban abortion before the point of roughly 24 weeks, when a fetus can survive outside the womb. Justices are separately weighing disputes over Texas's much earlier abortion ban at roughly 6 weeks, though those cases turn on a unique structure of law and how it can be challenged in court, not the abortion right. Still, abortion rights advocates were troubled by the court's 5-4 vote in September to allow the law, which relies on citizens' lawsuits to enforce it. "So, this is the most worried I've ever been," said Sharon Brewer, who runs the only abortion clinic in Mississippi. The clinic offers abortions up to 16 weeks, and about 10% of abortions it performs take place after the 15th week. She also noted, since the Texas law took effect, the clinic has seen a substantial increase in patients, operating 5 or 6 days a week instead of 2 or 3. Lower courts blocked the Mississippi law, as they have other abortion bans that employ traditional enforcement methods by state and local officials. The Supreme Court had never before even agreed to hear a case over a pre-viability abortion ban, but after Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death last year and a replacement by Justice Amy Coney Barrett, the third of Trump's appointees, the court said it would take up the case. Trump has pledged to appoint pro-life justices and predicted they would lead the way in overturning the abortion rulings. Only one justice, Clarence Thomas, famous for sexually harassing and otherwise being a not good person, has publicly called for Roe to be overturned. The court upholds the Mississippi law without explicitly overruling Roe and Casey, an outcome that would satisfy neither side. So, yeah, this is going to be very interesting, but this is just kind of a heads up that on Wednesday or Thursday, there's going to be a lot of news about this abortion fight coming up. All right. Focus. We've only got... Oh, man. I lost track of time. Crud. Here we go. Let's do COVID real quick. Dutch police have arrested quarantine hotel escapees. Dutch police say they detained a couple who escaped from a COVID quarantine hotel. The arrests were made on a plane in Amsterdam's Schiphol Airport just before it departed to Spain on Sunday. The Spanish man and Portuguese woman were later handed over to the country's health service. It comes after 13 people who arrived in Amsterdam on 2 flights from South Africa last week tested positive for the new variant. They are among 61 passengers who tested positive for COVID. It's not known whether the detained couple were among the passengers. And the WHO says never again. There's hopes to come up with a treaty for when this happens.
That sound means that our time's come to an end.
Sorry,
thanks
for
listening.
I'll
be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
The Dubious Goals Committee. All right, bye-bye. Have a good one. Sorry I didn't quite get into the COVID news today. We'll cover it tomorrow.